5, 2, 8, 2. Bonus episode.
Hello and welcome to our fifth bonus feature. We are recording material for Series 2 and hope to be back in early June. Now, when we record our recommendations and reviews, I ask Bill and Kevin to keep it under 6 minutes. That makes it easier to edit. However, what follows is what I usually get. It's Bill in full flow on Susie Sue, and Bill wasn't exactly sure on her recent album release date, and then Kevin on Donovan. If only there was some sort of helpline I could call. We start every episode with No Sherbet Sherlock. This time we are recommending two albums and a band. Each will improve your life, pinky promise. Bill, I think you have something for us.
Yes, I do, David. I was inspired last Saturday to buy the latest album by Susie, who is Susie Sue of the punk band, post-punk, cum goss, you know, star band Susie and the Banshees.
Great.
Who famously broke up the Banshees when the Sex Pistols reformed to do their Filthy Luke tour in 1996.
Yes.
Which I thought was very commendable. They are very successful, the Banshees. They started with a real kind of grungy punkness with Sid Vicious on drums and Marco Peroni later of the more pop starry Adam of the Ants,
yeah.
And they played kind of somebody like a 20-minute version of the Lord's Prayer at the
Hundred
Club or something like that. It was all pretty badly played and everything. But then just at the end of the pivotal 1977 year to do with punk, even though it's just like the psychedelic revolution, you know, a lot of people say it all started in 76, she formed a sort of a proper band that got a record contract with
Polydor.
Yeah. And I went to the first tour, which was a 40-minute concert where they played the first album, plus a few other singles, and I loved it.
It's weird that because they don't have any more to play, do they?
No. That was like, I went to PJ Harvey like that, you know, and she played 40 minutes. I saw her just play her first album.
Yeah. When I went to see Black Country New Road, they said, I'm sorry, we have to finish now because we haven't got any more songs.
Oh, they say, we're just going to repeat our first one again, you know, as an encore or something. Yeah, it's fine.
Mm, it's good.
But anyway, they had a wonderfully stellar pop career with what I consider to be very high quality singles, and I'm sure and you
very,
do as well, you know,
quality,
and you know, ones like Israel, Spellbound,
Happy
House. Well, their first single,
Hong Kong Garden.
was put them on the map.
I think Israel's quite underrated, actually.
Yes, I don't know how it would go, you know, down in the, I mean, it doesn't say anything too provocative, but it'd be interesting how it would be interpreted by a modern audience, actually, or modern people that like to interpret these things in a bad way, maybe.
Yes.
I mean, the band always had Susie, and it always had the bass player, Stephen Severin, in, who, as we know, we factors into the Velvet Underground, Severin, Your Servants, which factors into the Damascock book, you know, Venus in Furs. And in its more kind of longevity period, it had Susie's partner, Budgie, on drums, who was a pretty great drummer. So, unlike other bands, and I think I was inspired by inheriting my brother's Susie and the Banshees BBC sessions. I saw that she was touring not as Susie and the Banshees, but as Susie, which I think is a great thing. You know, she wasn't using the whole name to kind of, you know, try and sort of milk the cow or whatever after spending quiet years in France with surrounded by her cats.
She did the Creatures though, didn't she?
Yeah, well that went on while the Banshees were in their pomp.
Yeah.
That was just her and Budgie, really. And some of the recordings were just like vocals and drums.
Mm.
At the same time, because the esteemed Robert Smiths twice became a Banshee, first when the original guys cleared off mid-tour, which was probably about 1980, after their second album, Joining, which I found a bit disappointing, I suppose, to the Scream, the first time, which I thought was great. The Cure were actually the support act, and so Lawrence Tolhurst provided the drums, and Rob Smith was the... And again, apparently, I read in a music paper, they just did a version of the Lord's Prayer.
Right.
You know, which seemed to be their stalwart jam out number or something. There is a version of it on the second album, Joining. But as I say, I found it a bit disappointing, that album. But then when he came back, you know, with the new lineup, they, you know, the sky was the limit. And I just thought she was on tour, listened to that, and I thought, buy her album. It's called Manta Ray, right? Mm. And it hasn't got any old, you know, Banshee people on it.
Right.
In fact, I hadn't heard of any other people. It has actually got guitars and bass and drums, but it does have a kind of electro feel.
Mm.
And I'm still studying it, actually. I mean, I want to really like it. In some ways, the whole album pounds along.
Mm.
And I'm not sure if that's a bad thing in one sense. He does have other colours. One's got a trumpet on it. And her voice has matured into some kind of... She actually sings notes. Well, we've got to think of punk here. Mm. She actually sings notes because she was told in the early 80s when they were getting into their run of success that she would lose her voice if she didn't have some voice lessons because... Right. She was singing all wrong, you know, with knobs on, really. I mean, there's a few rock singers like that. Mm. I mean, if you're an opera singer, you sing from deep down your diaphragm. If you sing from your throat, you can end up with throat nodes and things. Grace Slick had them.
Yeah.
She's a great singer.
Yeah, it's all about the training.
Yeah, that's right. So she had to have a crash.
Tom Jones, he had problems with his nods, didn't he?
Right, yeah. Mm. Well, I think it can happen anyway, you know. Mm. But, you know, obviously if you sing, put a lot of pressure on your vocal cords... It's going to happen more, especially if you're some yowling type person. Mm. And there's, you know, if Susie was nothing else, she was definitely dramatic.
Mm. Yeah, yes,
in her own homespun way.
Yes.
So she's got this more laid back, older voice, which I'm trying to find the right comparison, really. It's like a chanson, not really chanson, really.
What about Marianne Faithfull nowadays?
Yeah, well, she's a bit not as kind of grizzled as Marianne Faithfull, but you've come up with a good comparison there for me.
Right.
Probably a mixture of that and somebody like Marlene Dietrich in some way, which I'm sure she'd dig that idea.
Yeah.
You know, and she sings these very sort of low, languorous sort of songs, and the lyrics sound quite good. I mean, and the packaging for it is, I bought it on CD, it's like a little LP.
Yeah.
It's got a little inner sleeve and a little pull-out that's got a picture of her, which, you know, it's kind of glamorised, but it's so art house, it doesn't matter.
It sounds like you need to sort of listen to it three or four times. Because
I've listened to
it. Just going to ask about how many times you listened to it.
I've listened to it twice.
Is she on tour for this?
Yes, she is. That's where I first saw her name. Yeah. And
because I've seen some of the promo stuff for that.
Right.
She's quite glamorised.
Yeah, well, she's 65, though.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because she's born, this, you know, 1958, I think.
You gave a shout-out to Budgie. And I went online and looked it up because I recalled from earlier this year he's got a project out at the moment.
Oh, very good, because I always saw he was a good drummer.
Yeah, Los Angeles, it's called.
Right.
With a drummer from The Cure.
Oh, wow.
Now, what drummer is that?
Lol Tolhurst.
Oh, right, well, because he became their keyboard player because I don't think he was too good a drummer, and then he had a drink problem, was ousted from the band after Disintegration.
Yeah, quite early on, actually, yeah.
Yeah, well, early on to do with now, but they don't, just before the super pop Love Cats bits happens.
And quite acrimonious for a while, but all resolved now.
Well,
more or less.
I read a review only the other week when I was in London that he's somehow intellectualised goth which I didn't think was a genre. You yes. could intellectualise.
There was a book out.
The yeah, book, he's yeah. brought a book out. Now, again, it's like with Susie and the Banshees. I don't think The Cure really saw themselves originally as a goth band. In fact, they had crew cuts and things mm. originally, and yeah. they did a Hendrix mm. number on their first Fire on their first album.
Mm.
And the third album was a real doomo kind of keyboards-driven album. Can't remember what it's called now, the Cure's third album. I'm sorry about that, folks.
See, I didn't
I'm sure
actually,
Dr. Google will tell us at some point.
I didn't actually realise...
Faith, that, I think it was called. Yes, that
yeah,
was it.
I think you're right.
I didn't actually realise that... I when I thought about The Cure, I thought that Robert had left Susie and the Banshees to form The Cure, but they were already in existence.
That's right. No, they were going... And in fact, they yeah. were going... If you had the Outtakes album, Curiosity, which was on the cassette...
Mm.
You know, they were doing tracks back in 76.
Yeah.
One called
yeah.
Heroin Face. Now, I wonder who that was influenced by, Kevin.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yep, very good. I think I'm quite keen to listen to this album.
Oh, yes, I think it's worth listening to. Yeah, and yeah. I'd like to go and see it on tour, really. You know.
Right, so, Kevin, I believe you have an album.
I do. Donovan Galea. A new Donovan album is always a huge event for me. I've been listening to his music seriously for 5 decades. Can you believe that? I don't look it, do I, Bill?
Oh, no, well,
more like 6 and a half.
well, the thing is, Kevin, I mean, and I'm not knocking Donovan, but some of his songs are accessible by quite young children.
Yeah,
really,
they are. It's a bit like some of the stuff that Yusuf Cat Stevens has been doing lately.
Right. Yes.
Which is great. Yeah, so he's 77 now, is Donovan. He's still writing new songs and still recording, which is brilliant. So Galea, released in December 2022. It sees Donovan going back to his Scottish roots. It's a stunning album featuring musical talents such as Sharon Shannon, Dave Gilmour, Nigel Kennedy.
Right.
So there's people from every genre there.
Yeah, but they're all good lads in some ways, or yeah. lasses.
Yeah, lads and lasses, yeah. So, yeah, Donovan is in fine voice throughout, accompanied by flute and violin on the opener, the beautiful melancholic Moon Over Clare. Galea, it just keeps on delivering. It's one of those, you know, you think, wow, where's all this coming from? So there's a track called Glasgow Town, a very lively affair. The Ferryman's Daughter, which is quite the opposite. Down by the Harbour, featuring some excellent harmonica, which I always think when a harmonica comes into something that it's really special, you know, the likes of Bob Dylan and Neil Young and that, it just makes it for me.
And
oh yeah, well, then we can't not talk about harmonicas and not talk about Paul Jones, can we? Yeah, that's true. That is true. Yeah. So yeah, Dave Gilmour features on two tracks, Rock Me, there's a video of Rock Me, which is really good, and Lover Oh Lover. And they're really, really
good.
Yeah,
but you know, Dave Gilmour is a big fan of some of this stuff. Mm. And when the Pretty Things did their sort of Abbey Road concert of SF Sorrow in 1999, the first broadcast on the internet concerts, Dave Gilmour was involved guitar because he liked the Pretty Things better than the Stones back in their more grungy days.
Yes. Yeah.
But then the Pretty Things, Pink Floyd and the Beatles were all in Abbey Road sort of recording their various albums around the same time. So he did have contact with them and stuff.
Right, yeah.
If you, I've got a film of that. You know, you have to see that. It's great. It's got Arthur Brown doing the narrative.
Yeah, Arthur, we'll watch that. So yeah, I was lucky enough to see Donovan in October 2015 at Leeds Town Hall. He just sat cross-legged on a Persian rug and delivered an incredible set, which included all the real greats: Catch the Wind, Buffy St. Marie's, Universal Soldier, Jennifer Juniper, The Hurdy-Gurdy Man, Sunshine Superman, and Mellow Yellow. It had to be there. It was incredible. You actually were there as well.
Yes, I was. Yeah.
So good.
Mind you, I've enjoyed the other two times I saw him as well.
That's just rubbing it in, Bill.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Anyway, I only managed to ever see him once. So, yeah, it was for me a privilege to be there. Galea by Donovan is out now on Donovan Discs Limited. It's available on all the best streaming sites and through Donovan's own website. We'll leave the details on the social media pages.
Marvellous. Yeah, but it's a bit weird when you think, yeah, he's in his 70s.
He just keeps coming with it.
With us all our lives.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like Arthur Brown when I saw him when he was a week off 80.
Thanks awfully for listening to this bonus episode of 5282. We will be back every Monday with extra content until the start of Series 2. In the meantime, don't forget to rate, review and even donate to 5282. And so, that seems to be all. Until we meet again, take care of yourself. Thank you for listening to this episode of 5282, which is a out of left field production. You can follow us on X at OOLF Presents 5282 and OOLF Presents 5282 on Facebook. And that's for numbers 5, 2, 8, and 2. The producer was Kevin Petch. Engineering and editing was by David Benn. William Asprey was on harmonica. 5282 is part of the Acast family.